Everybody, and I do hope that you've had a good afternoon, and I hope you've had a blessed holidays, and I hope everybody does have a wonderful, wonderful New Year's. It has been brought to my attention that tonight I think the Titans have a game and Alabama has a game. Now, thinking about that, I thought surely we don't have any Alabama fans here. But I knew we had some Titans fans. And so what I've decided that I think is appropriate, having discussed with the elders, I'm sure they don't mind. We're going to dismiss all the Titans fans early. But all the Alabama fans here tonight need all the preaching they can get. So I'm going to go to 7:30 just for those guys. So if you're visiting, I'm just kidding. But I do appreciate you being here tonight. I'm continually reminded that every time we gather, there were other choices that you could have made, that we could have made. And there's going to come a day when there may be some things in this life we didn't see or places we didn't go. But because of the choice we made tonight, someday we'll get to go to a place that some of those people made different choices about will not get to see. And we'll get to go to a place where they may not get to go. And I guess I'd rather miss it now than to miss what awaits me there. As we look tonight, we're going to continue what we started talking about this morning. I mentioned to you this morning that I had received a postcard, and you can see it, I think it's up on the screen, but advertising a website hosting service, and they asked some questions about the, you know, what is the health of your website? And they had five particular things that they focused on and asked questions about. And as I looked at those, I thought, man, that's something that can relate to us in our Christian lives. So this morning, we looked at numbers three and four, actually, this morning. And what I'd like to do tonight is look at one, two, and five on their list and take some of the questions they asked that relate from the area of physical health, and they applied it to internet health and how healthy a website was. But I wanted to take it from those two arenas and apply it to our spiritual health. Now, this morning we focused a great deal on our individual spiritual health. Tonight I want us to focus a little more so, though not excluding us individually, a little more on our congregational health. And as we do so, let's just begin looking at some of the things that are listed in their question. The first question they asked is about our complexion. Do we have a pasty complexion? That it actually says, does it have a poor design? In other words, if you go to a website, is it poorly designed such that when you look at it, it just right away looks bad? Maybe you've been to websites, and as you've gone to those websites, there's just some that get your attention. You can think about even just driving down the road. There are some signs that just reach out and grab you, and some that are kind of so mundane or poorly done that you go on by them and you're aware there's a bunch of signs, but none of them jump out at you. And so what he says is sometimes the way a site's designed tells you that it's something wrong with its design. If a person walks into a doctor's office, there may be times when just from looking at the person, without ever doing any vitals, the doctor can immediately tell something's wrong and may even be able to tell what that something is. I mean, there's a decent chance if you come in with little red dots all over you, there's a possibility it might be chicken pox or some other disease related to that. Now, as we think about that, I remember a story this week. I was talking to a fellow Christian, and he was talking about a time when his daughter was sick. And he took her into the doctor, and the doctor looked at her and seemed like she kind of had a yellowish tint, jaundice kind of tint to her skin. And the doctor looked at his daughter and said, I think I know what your problem is. I think there's something wrong with your appendix, just from looking at the child. They then ran some tests, and sure enough, the problem was the appendix. In other words, one of the things I think a doctor would do, and you can talk to some of the doctors and verify this, but it seems to me from going to the doctor myself, sometimes what they look at is what do we look like on the outside. Then they also look at what we look like on the inside. So as we think about that, and we think about the fact that sometimes you can just tell a person is sick, or maybe you can tell a website is not what it should be or could be, I want us to think about that as a congregation. I want us to think about, first of all, what God sees when He looks at us. And then I want us to think about what the world sees when they look at us. As we think about God, I'm reminded of a couple of statements that are made by the Apostle Paul. In Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10, he talks about,
he's talking about his own life, and he's asking basically the question, do I seek the favor of men or of God? And he says, if I was seeking the favor of men, I wouldn't be doing what I was doing. There were those who accused Paul of doing what he was doing for the wrong reasons. And basically Paul says, look at what I've done, look at what I've endured. I wouldn't be doing this if I was trying to please only human beings. Paul says, the focus of my life is on pleasing God. That's Galatians chapter 1, verse 10. I can also look in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 8. It talks about being careful about being trapped and led away by philosophy and specifically the traditions of men. What I want us to think about is first of all, what does God think when He sees us? When He looks at us as a congregation, does He see us as a congregation that's spiritually healthy? Does He see us as a congregation that's seeking to do His will, walk in His ways, or does He see us as people who are trying to follow the latest fads and the latest traditions? Because fads don't just happen in clothing and shoe wear. Fads happen in the religious world as well, and there's always some new fad, some new theory, some new book out there. They've been there for a long time. As Solomon said, of the writing of books, there is no end, and it's true in the religious realm as well as any other realm. And so there's going to be a tendency to follow those different fads. There will be some books and some teachings that will be politically correct, even in a climate, in a society like ours, which is becoming more and more anti-Christian. There are still some religious teachings out there that have been popularized, and you can even see interviews with folks popularizing some of those theories, even on some of your major news networks. And so there can be a tendency for us, because we want to go along, to get along, we want to be accepted and viewed as normal, to buy into some of that stuff. And so I think Paul challenges us to say, why do I do what I do? Why do we do what we do? Is our goal to please ourselves? Is our goal to please our community? Or is our goal to please our God? What does He see when He looks at us? Does He see a people who put Him first? Another thing I want us to think about is not only what God sees when He looks at us, but I want us to think about what God's people see when they look at us and what the world sees when they look at us. I want to remind you of something we noted over in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1. Remember when we were looking at that chapter, we talked about Paul's praying for and bragging on and excitement about this young congregation at Thessalonica. They were facing all kinds of persecution, yet they endured, they stood firm, and so he describes that. He talks about in verse 3, constantly bearing in mind your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope. In verse 6 of 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, he said, you also became imitators of us and of the Lord, and you received the word in great tribulation. So he's bragging on their faith. But Paul wasn't the only one who had noticed that. In verse 7, he says, you became an example to all the believers in Macedonia and in Achaia, for the word of the Lord has sounded forth from you, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place your faith toward God has gone forth. He said everybody's talking about the congregation at Thessalonica. Now they weren't on the inside. They didn't regularly worship with the congregation at Thessalonica. But just from what they saw on the outside, just the complexion, the face, just like that person walks into the doctor's office and sits down, before they start doing any tests, he can sometimes or she can sometimes tell about the health of the person a little bit by looking at the color of their skin and how they look. The same thing was going on with the church at Thessalonica. Everybody that heard about them, or maybe people that passed through and visited and worshiped them for a Sunday, when they saw them, there was just something about them. And Paul said, we all saw the same thing. We saw your faith, we saw your love, and we saw your steadfastness of hope. And then I also think about what Peter had to say. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 12, Peter talks about letting our conversation, our walk, our way of life be lived out in such a way in the presence of the Gentiles, literally the nations. Those outside of Christ would be the idea. He said, live in such a way that they would glorify God, that even if they attack us, even if they try to ridicule us, even if they try to undermine what we do, that our actions would be so excellent and so praiseworthy and so godly that in the end they would praise God. And so whether we're dealing with what other congregations think about us, or whether we're dealing with what the world thinks about us, what do they see on the face of us when they look at us? When they run into us individually? When they see things that we're doing in the community? Would we, if we were to interview everybody over at West 7th, would they say, you know, that looks like a healthy congregation? If we were to go to folks at Spring Meadows and say, what do you know about Graymere? Would they say, you know, they look like a healthy congregation? If we were to drive to any of the businesses up and down the street, or just pull in somebody's house, or stop some folks over here on the corner hole at the golf course and say, tell me, what do you know about the Graymere Church of Christ? Would they say, you know, they look a little sick to me based on what I've seen here and here and here and here? Or would they say, you know, they look healthy. I see their faith lived out every day. I see the things they're doing, the people they're helping. I see their love and their hope. I think the first question challenges us to think about, what do we look like first to God, then to other brothers and sisters, and then to the world? The next thing I want us to think about is I want us to move from thinking about what we look like to God and thinking about what our complexion is. I want us to think about our age. And I know I'm getting personal here, and so you know, I don't mean to. It was just the question that was asked on it. But here's the question. A website can look like it's aged beyond its years and it has outdated content. So what they're saying is, when you look at your web page, does it look outdated? Does it look aged beyond its years? In other words, if you go to that website, are you reading about activities that took place 6 months ago? Or are you reading about activities that are happening right now? Well, I want us to think about a congregation. And I'm not talking about physical age. I'm not talking about the physical age of the members. I'm not talking about the physical age of the congregation. You know, I once preached at a congregation that at the time I was there, we celebrated our 170th anniversary as a congregation. Okay, and they've had several more anniversaries since then. And we as a congregation have been going a little over 50 years. So I'm not dealing with that kind of age. But basically we're dealing with relevance and whether we are young and vibrant, or whether we're aged beyond our years. Again, think in terms of what folks think when they look at us and what they think when they see us. Do they see us as out of date and out of touch? Or do they see us as relevant? I want you to think about the world in which we live and the opportunities we have. When Jesus said, go out into the fields and pray that God would send workers into the field, for the harvest is plentiful, best I can come up with is there were about 400 million people on the planet. Now there's 6.5 billion or something thereabout. Now folks, if they had opportunities and the fields were widened to harvest 2,000 years ago, look at the opportunities around us. And think of all the avenues that we have to go out and get the gospel out into the world. All the tools that are available to us to do ministry. I want you to think of all of the mechanical advances that just change simple things, like if somebody in the congregation needs their house worked on. You know, we've got some major technological advances that can help us to do that. We've got electricity. And we've got saws and machinery. We don't have to pull out just a hammer or just a handsaw. Just think about the things that we can use on a daily basis just to work on things around our home that they didn't have 2,000 years ago. And think of what technology has brought along. I mean, we've gone along from just having paper documents, that we've got radio and we've got television and we've got shortwave radio going out, sending the gospel all over the world. And we've got the internet and we've got MySpace and we've got YouTube and we've got podcasts, and it goes on and on and on. All of these opportunities and all of these avenues that were never available in Jesus' day. If they wanted to get the message somewhere, you started walking, or you got on the back of a donkey or some other animal and you rode for days and days, or you got on a ship for months and months. We can jump on an airplane and be in Panama in about 6 hours preaching the gospel. Or we can be in India in about a day and a half preaching the gospel. That would have been unheard of in Paul's day. So what I want us to think about is, what are we doing to take advantage of all of those opportunities? Are we on the cutting edge, constantly looking and saying? Because I'm of the belief that God gave human beings the ability to do that stuff. Okay, if somebody can develop a computer, you know why they developed it? Because God, when He made the human brain, He made a brain capable of figuring that stuff out. Now, I've got a choice then. If He made the brain capable of figuring that stuff out, am I going to use that which was created by a brain that He created to His glory, or am I going to use it to my glory? And so my philosophy of life is that when something new comes out, I want it to be to God's glory. I don't want the devil to get it. The devil's going to get it. He's always laid his hands on the best stuff. But too far, too many times, as God's people, we've lived in the past. And we've let the devil use that stuff for years and years, and then we all say, oh, well, maybe we can use that for good. I want you to notice something. I want you to look with me in the book of Hebrews. If you look in Hebrews chapter 1, it says in verse 1 of Hebrews chapter 1, God, after He spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in His Son, whom He appointed heir to all of all things, through whom also He made the world. I want to ask you something. Did God always do the same things in the same way down through the years? Did He ever change how He did things? In other words, did He get in a set rut? Now, I understand that God is unchangeable in His nature. His truth is unchangeable. But when it came to how He let us know about His nature, and when it came to how He spread His truth, did He keep that constant, or did He change that down through the years? It's just a simple statement here in Hebrews. If you go back to a period of human history when the world revolved around the family unit, and the patriarchs, the leaders, the male leaders of the family, who did God communicate through? The male leaders. When we had a society, and especially Israel, was ruled by kings, how did God communicate? He no longer communicated specifically through the fathers and heads of the households and the clans. He communicated through prophets to the kings. And one thing you find as you read through 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles, it's really about whether the king would listen to the prophet or not. And if they didn't listen to the prophet, they weren't listening to God. He changed it. Then He sent His Son in human flesh. We see adjustment and change. I want you to look at Jesus. You know, those of you in education are familiar with Dewey's Cone of Learning. And these different ways you can learn by verbal symbols and visual symbols and simulated experiences and direct experiences. These are different ways of learning, and some are more effective than the other. Verbal is the least effective, and visual is more effective than that. And then actually experiencing and doing it yourself is the best way to learn. Well, if you sit and break down the teaching of Jesus, you're going to find that He used all of those. In Mark 1, He's preaching and teaching. You know, in Mark 9, He's using visual symbols. At times He might take a child and set them in front of the congregation. Or He might, in places like John 6, He would give them simulated experiences. And He would turn to one of His disciples and say, how are we going to feed all these people? And He asked that question of somebody who lived locally and knew how to get to the local eating establishments. He said, how are we going to feed all these folks? That's a simulated experience. He wasn't really in charge. Jesus already knew He was going to perform a miracle to feed those people. But He wanted that disciple to think about, what would I do if I was in that situation? And then He had direct experiences in places like Luke chapter 10, where He took them and divided them up in twos and said, all right, start doing it. I've been talking about preaching the gospel. Now go do it. Jesus didn't reach people the same way all the time. He used stories. He used questions. He used discussions. He used debating. He used illustrations. He used all kinds of methods at his disposal, and He often adjusted to the person. He didn't talk to Nicodemus, a Jewish religious leader in John chapter 3, the same way He talked to the woman at the well, who was a woman living an immoral lifestyle and was a Samaritan. He approached them each differently. My point is that if God understood that you have to be willing to adjust to times and people and need and circumstances, why is it that if Jesus understood that we don't? That we get in habits of doing things the same way, and we make those habits of delivering the gospel as sacred as the gospel. When it comes to the gospel message and the morals of the Bible and worshiping as God said worship and organizing the church as God says to organize, we need to walk in the old paths. But when it comes to getting that message out to the world and ministering to people's needs, we need to be as relevant as 5 seconds ago. I need to be thinking about how can I, in the best way, get that message out to my community. And so we can't just be content in the past. Yes, God put the Ten Commandments on stone, but He didn't put the epistles of Paul on stone. What we do sometimes is we just keep writing on stone when God has allowed us new opportunities. So I think the question we need to ask ourselves is when the community looks at us, when they look at what we do, when they look at our outreach, our facilities, when they look at everything about us, do they say, that's a congregation that is trying to make God's Word relevant to my life? They're excited and they're on fire? Or do they look at us and say, that congregation is out of date and out of touch and is dying? Number 5, he talks about poor circulation. You know, basically what our circulation system, our cardiovascular system does is you basically are dealing with that circular network within the body in which the blood flows through all the parts of the body, at least through the major systems, and it works through the heart, works through the pulmonary, the lung system, and then the other systems of the body to get oxygen and nutrition to all the parts of the body, to remove waste, to fight infection. All of that's necessary for the body to live. Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death in the physical realm. But it also can be a cause of death in the spiritual realm. See, when we're dealing with this idea of circulation in the body, we're talking about whether all the parts of the body are being fully nourished and being given what they need to thrive and survive. And when we're dealing with it on the internet side, as they're trying to do in this little, you know, handout or brochure or whatever it is that I got in the mail, they're asking, do you have dead links? What they mean by that is you can go to the main website and it may say, click here for a Bible study. When you click on that Bible study, does it go anywhere? There's no circulation. It's not connected. The main site's not connected to that limb, if you will. It's not alive anymore. And I think there's a lot of things that we need to think about in regard to that, and we won't be able to go into these into great detail tonight, but basically we're dealing with connection and giving of life and nourishment and encouragement. I want us to think about what is our circulation like. First of all, are we doing what God has called us to do to connect the world to Christ? Are we giving the world the opportunity to live? You see, there is no life. Just as I cannot live without the oxygen and nourishment that my blood brings to the parts of my body, people cannot live spiritually without Jesus Christ. So are we going to the world as we ought to be, giving them a chance to have that life? If they do decide to accept Christ, or maybe if there are folks like the Pagels and others who have placed membership in the congregation, either maybe it's somebody who wasn't a Christian who's become a Christian, they express their faith and repentance, confession and baptism, they put on Christ and they want to start worshiping with us, or maybe it's somebody who's been a Christian for some time and moved to the community or moved to another part of town or decide they want to be a part of our fellowship. For whatever it was that brought them to us, what are we doing to connect them and nourish them and strengthen them and uplift them? You know, statistics show that if you don't find friends within a few months after placing membership, you will not stay. What are we doing to nourish those new members? What are we doing to nourish those Christians who've moved to our fellowship or those folks who've just become Christians for the first time? What are we doing to make sure they grow in the faith and that their needs are being met? What are we doing to make sure that every part of the body gets the nourishment and uplifting and life that it needs, just like that blood goes all through the parts of the human body? I'm reminded as we think about this in Acts chapter 9, verse 26, when Paul tried to join himself to the brethren in Jerusalem. He knew that he needed the nourishment of being with God's people, but they wouldn't let him do it. But you had a man named Barnabas who ran a vein over to him. And he went over and said, "Here, let me connect you with the rest of the body. Let me connect you to the life-giving spiritual flow you need, the company of other Christians." So he introduced Paul to the other Christians and the apostles, and he lived. Are we doing that? And what about when folks within the congregation are struggling and suffering? You know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 26, he basically says, "When one suffers, we all suffer. When one rejoices, we all rejoice." What that means is every part of the body ought to get what it needs. If they need somebody to cheer with them, we ought to be there to cheer with them. If they need somebody to cry with them, we ought to be there to cry with them. How's our circulation working? Are we helping everybody or only a few? Are we meeting all the problems of ourselves or only certain ones that get noticed? And how connected are we to each other? Because the circulatory system, you know, it may work with the heart network, and it may work with the lung network, and in the other systems in the body, it not only has to keep each individual system alive, but all those systems then have to work together. How well are we connected? I find it interesting in Titus chapter 2, verses 3 through 5, it talks about the older women teaching the younger women. One of my fears about the modern church is we've become generationally stratified. We have young kids activities, and we have teens activities, and we have college and young professionals activities, and we have middle agers activities, and we have empty nesters activities, and we have senior saints activities. But how often do all those people get together? And a lot of the studies I've read in recent years says the key to faith retention in young people is the amount of contact they have with older faithful Christians. In fact, the studies show that being around older faithful Christians will have a greater impact on young people keeping their faith when they get out on their own than running around with fellow peers their same age who are Christians. That it's older Christians who impact whether they stay a Christian more so than whether their friends at school were Christians. So how are we going to help that to happen if we're not connected? If all the generations aren't spending lots of time together. Now, it's fine to do some things apart time and again, but we need to be connected. Because I need what the senior saints have to offer. I also need the energy and excitement for God that those first graders have to offer. The circulatory system needs to run from beginning to end, front to back. We all need each other. So really what I'm trying to do is just ask some grand big questions. I'm not trying to point fingers. If I'm pointing anywhere, I'm pointing at myself because I've done a lot of thinking in the process of this sermon about things I need to do better. And so I'm going to work on that, and each of us will have to work on it for ourselves. But I want us to think about, how do we look to God? How do we look to the world? Are we out of touch? Are we doing all we can to the best of our ability to carry on God's work? Are we connected? Are we helping each other? Are we equipping each other for ministry? If we've been put in an area of ministry, are we doing that ministry? Are we like that link on that web page? You can go to the website and you can click on the link and nothing happens. That happens in a lot of congregations. You can go to the congregation, you can click on preacher, and nothing happens. You can go to the congregation and click on deacon, and nothing happens. You can go to the congregation and click on Bible class teacher, and nothing happens. We're not alive. We're not doing anything. We're not connected. Would you take out your songbooks and turn to the hymn of encouragement? We talked about some ball games tonight. The Titans are going to play a game in just a little bit. And that game will determine whether or not they go to the playoffs. The decisions they've made up to this point in the season, the decisions that they'll make tonight on that field, and the things they do will impact their immediate future and their distant future. What I'm trying to do today as we think about these simple questions that I just haphazardly came across by opening the mail, is I want us to think about the fact that spiritually the decisions we make right now impact our future. Every football team begins the year with the goal of going to the Super Bowl. And everybody in training camp thinks they can do it for the most part. Our future lies with God. Our mission is to fulfill His mission in the world and live in eternity with Him. And the decisions we make right now impact whether that happens. It is guaranteed that the church will last. it is not promised that the gray mere congregation of the Lord's church will last. Do you realize that most of the congregations Paul wrote his letters to do not exist anymore? The church still exists, but somewhere down the line, those Christians quit paying attention to their spiritual health and they let their congregations die. My prayer is that individually and collectively, we will never, never let that happen. Thank you for your vibrance, your life, and your love for the Lord. And let's endeavor to keep on keeping on. If we can help you in your walk with God, if you'd like to become a Christian, if you'd like to rededicate your life to God as a Christian, or if you just need somebody to pray for you because the world has had a heavy burden put on your back, then won't you come as we stand?